Okay, Bamidbar. Bamidbar brings back warm and fuzzy memories. Bamidbar was my Bar Mitzvah parsha. Bamidbar was then again the parsha of the week of my Ofarov, so I read it again. And then I had to speak about it many times in the Bayit, which is also where I got married. So, Bamidbar has, I have all these fond memories of Parshat Bamidbar, of like my Bar Mitzvah speech, wonderful times. Always good to come back to Bamidbar. Worth noting, of course, that Bamidbar is not the proper name of the book, because the pasuk is not Bamidbar, it's Bimidbar, because it's in, right, a desert, not the desert. But okay, Bimidbar, well, it's in the desert of Sinai, it's Bimidbar Sinai. Why we ended up calling it by its wrong name is beyond me. But let's follow our Midrash theme. Because, Bamidbar Rabbah was brutal. It is brutal. It is brutal. It is 23 Pisgahot, but that's not what's brutal about it. Like Vayikra Rabbah, if you look at like the translation that we have over there, Eli has it next to him. Right? So Vayikra Rabbah is one volume. Vayikra Rabbah is one volume. Right? That's Leviticus, right? Vayikra Rabbah is one volume.
No, four is just one.
No, so it's one. Right. It's one. That is 30, that's 37 Pisgahot, Vayikra Rabbah in one volume. But Bamidbar Rabbah is more than twice the length of that in translation, but it's only 23 Pisgahot, which means each Pisgah is like four times the length of those in Vayikra Rabbah. It's quite long.
Is Shmot the one with two volumes, though?
Breishit and Bamidbar are two volumes.
Oh, so that's why this is number four.
Correct. Yes. But in my head, I had this thing that I committed myself to at least one Pisgah a day, which of course in Bamidbar Rabbah took me about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on some of them are insanely long. So might as well share some ideas from Bamidbar Rabbah. It's okay. I'm on Breishit Rabbah now. So, Levet Avotam. So the Jews camp according to their father's house. Lohia tzarich lomar ela ish al diglo be'otot yachanu b'nei Yisrael. Ma tamud lomar Levet Avotam. Why does it say according to their father's houses? Why don't you just say that they camped according to their flags? Doesn't that make more sense, right? Once you've set up these flags, so what is it? So Hadu Dechtiv Esad De'ilam Erachov Vayetein Tzedek. So here the Midrash says something fascinating, and it says Avot doesn't mean just their individual family units, because that is already clear that they are camping according to those units, because the flags represent the family units, right? You have to think midrashically, right? You have two phrases. You have a Degel, and you have Beit Avot. Now, it's clear that the Degel represents the Beit Avot. So a very Pashtun view would just say, yes, the flags that represented their family houses. But according to Midrash, that is superfluous, because if the flags are representing the family house, then all you have to say is either they camp according to their familial houses or they camp according to their flags. You don't need to say both of them. So in classic Midrashic thought, what then do you do? You say that the Av here is a different Av. It's a different Av. So what does it do? It quotes a pasuk in Yevamah. When God told Moshe, make them flags like they desire, Moshe was in pain. This is going to cause fighting amongst the tribes. If I tell Yehuda, stay in the east, dwell in the east, camp in the east, and he says, I want the south. So what am I supposed to do? Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, ma ichbat lach? What do you care? Ein srichin lach. They don't need you. Me'etzman hein makirin diratan. Of their own accord, they know where to live. Ela diateke yesh piyadan Yaakov avihem heach lishrot bedigalim. Yaakov told them how they are going to dwell Eini mechadesh aleihem. I'm not saying anything new. Kvar yesh len tachsiz miagova v'en gemoshetano do v'ikivu ed mitato kach yakivu ed amishkan. And the way in which they surrounded his bed is the way in which they are now going to dwell. To Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, Kevin Shabbat Yaakov Aminu, Lipater Min Ha'olam, Kara Lefanav, Tichtiv Ha'ekra Yaakov Al-Banav U'Be'erchan, V'tzivan Al-Darkei Ha'Elohim, V'kiblo Alei Malchut Shamayim. And now quotes a Midrashic tradition you probably know, right, that when Yaakov was dying, he calls his family to accept God. Mishagamar Dvarav, Amar Lehem, Kishetitlu, Oti B'Yirav, Kavod, Lavo Otav, V'Lu'iga Adam Achar Mitati. And then he goes on, and he says, right, when you die, make sure you're the only ones who hold my coffin. Right, this idea, right, that when he calls them together, they are being called to accept Malchut Shamayim. Right now, the burial thing is not as famous, but the idea, right, the Shema Baruch Shem Kivod Malchut El Olam Vaed, which is the version that we have in Psachim, but that idea that when Yaakov calls them together, he's calling them to accept Malchut Shamayim. So he warns them, I want you and not the Mitzvah to carry my coffin. And then he says, so that later on he says, Yisru Otam Vanav, they carry him. Sorry. Vayasu Banav Lochein Kasher Tzivav. His children did what he commanded them. Vanav Lo Bnei Vanav, the children and not the grandchildren. Vayisru Otam Vanav, Ech Tzivav El Amar Lehem Banai Yehuda Yisachar Zvon Yitunu Mitatim Ena Mizrach. Ruvain Shimon Megad Yitunu Mitatim Ena Darom. Ephraim Menashe Uvinyamin Yatum Ena Ma'arav. Dan Hashem Naftali Yitunu Ena Tzafon. Right, the Shvatim, he divided them up, 3, 3, 3, 3, not Yosef, and then finally the encampments in Bamidbar mix it up a little bit for relevant factors. And later on the Midrash, this should be Yaakov, Haibam, Deah, Hech, Yeshud, Galim, Ulafoli, Etain, Sedek, Zakadosh, Baruch, Shapal, Pulo, Tavorim, Yisrael, etc. Right, so you see is that the Jews' encampment was based on this story that Yaakov had already said it. Okay, now this is a very weird midrash, right? Meaning, again, what drives the midrash seems to be, at least in part, this, I should note, Bamidbar Rabbah is the latest of the Midrashei Rabbah. It's very late. Rashi didn't even have access to it, right? This is a medieval midrash. The collection, some of it is early, but fundamentally it's a very late midrash, right? So it does function a little bit differently. But still, fundamentally, the drive seems to be this doubling, right? At least linguistically. That you have Degel and you have Eid Avotam, right? The Degel is according to Beit Avotam, why do you need both? So the Midrashic answer is, the Degel isn't according to their, right? The simple pshat is the flag of each little family unit. And what's the Midrash? The flags according to that which they had in the house of their father, meaning singular, right? Not each family's house, but the flags were according to Yaakov, who is their collective father, right? That's how the Midrash is reading, right? The Degel, right? And therefore it builds a...
the alternative to the flags of Yaakov?
A flag according to each of their own family houses. Beit Avotam. Their fathers.
I mean, no.
Not their father, but their fathers.
Given the size of the nation, if the measure's impractical?
No. I mean, that's what it means, right? They camp by Shevet in family units.
And each family would have a standard instead of each Shevet.
Well, probably not, right? The simple shot, as Ellie's noting, is that it's probably two different things. They camp according to the flags, right? So either it's doubling, right? Or it's the flag of the tribe. And then within the tribe, they camp according to their family house, right? Or something like that, right? That's another way of reading it.
The question is, do you derive the flags from...
So they don't right, so they don't necessarily have their own flags per family. Either it's the Shevet flag in each family by itself, or maybe there's a mini flags, I don't know, for each family. But what it, right, when the Midrash is saying, well, wait a second, the flag should be, right, the flag should represent their family house. You only need to tell me one or the other, right? And then it comes up with the conclusion, oh, Beit Avotam, right, is that the flags were set up from the times of their father, not fathers, but father from Yaakov, the way that, right, they buried. So what's the Midrash getting at, right? Why would the Midrash say this, right? So one, obviously, there's a textual thing. Second, right, I want to just talk about, what is the Midrash accomplishing?
I think it's saying that they want, I feel like it's trying to get a point of like forging new identities for each shivet.
Okay, clarify meaning.
Well, there, a large part of the sojourn on the Midbar is about acquiring a national identity, like stepping up from just a mass of people into a nation. And I feel like part of that would be from what I assume you would end up with, like a network of interwoven clans. You separate into formally defined shvatim.
Okay, so I'm going to hold Ellie's thought for 1 second because I think Ellie's right, right? I think you could have taken a very simplistic view, which is simply that Midrash in general likes to do some sort of Masa Avot Simin Lambanim and doesn't like seeing anything that we do as new rather than as historical, right? Everything has to be in some way tied into something, right? So it could be that. But Ellie picks up on the fact that's not what actually the Midrash says, right? What drives the Midrash is, or the story the Midrash tells to drive its whole story is, the Jews are going to be by their shvatim. And Moshe panics and says, now they're going to start fighting. And Hashem says they're not going to start fighting because it was set up in the time of Yaakov. And this seems to be the key to the Midrash, right? Is that the Midrash is trying to tell a different story slightly, or trying to use this to grapple with the question, which is, to what extent are the Jews a nation, and to what extent are they
a
conglomerate of tribes, each of which is a conglomerate of family units, right? And the way the Midrash gets at this tension is that Moshe looks at it and says, wait a second, we finally have a chance to be one nation, and now you're telling me that I should set them up by different flags? They're going to end up fighting, right? If you give people an identity, a tribal identity, then they're going
to
end up...
It's going to lead to tribalism.
Exactly, and they're going to end up fighting. And what's God's response?
No, they're...
They're not, because this was set up from the time of Yaakov. What does that help? Right? Well, what it's saying is, no, think about it. Right? This isn't... You're not introducing this identity to them. You're not giving them... They already have an identity as the children of Yaakov, and each one has their place. Meaning...
Did Moshe not know that people already held on to the tribal identity since Yaakov?
Well, so it's not about the tribal identity. He says more than that, right? Is that they know where their place is in the camp. They're not going to fight about it, right? I mean, they had tribal identity, but what is he saying in the Midrash? He's saying they won't fight about it either because this has been sent from Yaakov. Now, what is that really saying? He's saying...
That they are... I would say that it's like... Not that they are destined to take up this status as the organized Shvatim.
Right.
But that it's part of what they have to undergo.
Right, but also, why does it help? Remember, you have to think in the Midrash. The Midrash says the problem is they're going to fight. So why is the solution, well, this is how they did in the time of Yaakov.
They weren't fighting in the time of Yaakov.
Because?
They weren't tribes yet.
They weren't tribes.
They were just individual sons.
Exactly, they were the sons.
So if you reform right? them into singular identity.
Right, meaning, I think what the Midrash is saying, listen, it's possible for people to have a dual identity, to say, yes, I have my place, but we're all a family, right? We're all Yaakov's sons. That is actually possible, right? If I now introduce tribalism, you're right, that's going to cause fights. But if I go back and say, no, they actually identify as a family, right? And yes, it's possible for different children in a family to have an identity, but still identify as a family. So Hashem says, I understand it's a challenge, right? And if I was introducing tribalism, right, you're right, it could cause fights. But there actually is a way of navigating the tension, where on the one hand, you want them to be one tribe, one nation. On the other hand, they do have individual identities. You think that's not possible? It is possible. How is it possible? Think about yourself as a family, right? Because if this is coming... So I think that's what the Midrash is actually doing. By invoking the Yaakov thing, right, the Yaakov moment, what it's saying is, listen, you can't deny their individual identities, but you also don't have to give up on the idea of a national identity in favor of tribes, right? By invoking the family model, you have to remember that there is the possibility that you are a tribe, you are a nation, which is divided by tribes, just like you are a family with people of individual identities. And therefore, actually, is possible to create that dynamic. And I think that's the more profound thing that Midrash is trying to do, which is to note that at the beginning of Bamidbar, there is this tension. On the one hand, they are a nation. On the other hand, they are clearly tribal. Right? And the challenge is how to make sure that you can somehow get both. Right? And the solution from Midrash seems to be, well, think about it as it started. Think about it as a family. In a family, people can have their own place in the family, but still be a family. It's not that it's always easy, right? But if you actually internalize that idea that you have a place in the family, right? But you're also all the sons of Yaakov, you can actually navigate that dual identity. Right? I think that's what the Midrash is trying to get at in its very Midrashic way. You just need to tease it out. And again, the way to figure it out is, well, what is, there's the textual issue, but then there's the problem the Midrash says it's responding to, and that is Moshe being afraid, aren't they now going to fight? And God saying, no, right? That seems to be the less, right? It has to be that the drama is where the Midrashic lesson is. And if the drama is around Moshe saying they're going to fight and Hashem saying they're not going to fight despite the fact that you are giving them their own flags, putting them in their own place, right? Because they have this from Yaakov, it is telling you something profound about how you can maintain a tribal identity without fighting, right? And therefore, to look for the lesson of the Midrash, you have to look at the, right, at the conflict and the resolution the Midrash is proposing. Okay, so that's my suggestion on this Midrash. Maybe tomorrow I'll mention, right, Price takes a similar direction, but he has a, right, he sort of builds all philosophy around it, but I think this is just the structure of this Midrash.